Something wrong with your tea?
It is tea. I detest this stuff.
Tea? Tea?
I detest this stuff.
Tea? Tea?
I detest this stuff.
Tea? Tea?
I detest this stuff.
Tea? Tea? Something wrong with your tea?
Zaria, who'd have thought that in the year 2020 we would have two Dragon Age 4 reveals of in-game footage, concept art, and just general prototyping? We're actually now entering the season of Dragon Age 4's marketing stages, and I think that is so exciting.
And it's really exciting to kind of see this because we weren't expecting really anything. I think a lot of the fans weren't. We were just kind of being clowns and waiting. That was just kind of the predicted moment for all of us, but a very unexpected but surprising return to see Dragon Age and Dragon Age 4's progression.
For sure. I know that we all expected something at EA Play, given, you know, EA's nature. They have, you know, BioWare have a key, they're a key studio in EA, so we kind of expected something, and of course we did get something. But Gamescom literally took everyone, like literally from behind. I remember we were just in our Discord and we were just joining the call being like, oh, what are we going to see this year? Probably Assassin's Creed, probably this game, that game, Call of Duty. And then we get hit by Jeff Keighley being like, Casey Hudson is coming on the stage and he is going to talk about not Anthem 2.0, not any other plans, but Dragon Age. And honestly, that trailer, just seeing it was absolutely amazing. I was freaking out. I was swearing. I know you were at work in the Discord. It was absolutely crazy.
Just squealing with joy.
Yeah, because we didn't expect to see it and it was such a nice, welcome surprise. Because I know that we did get something at EA Play, but everyone in the community, including ourselves, we're like, okay, that's really nice to see, but we do want something more substantial that we can at least sink our teeth into.
Well, yeah.
And obviously, everyone wants more. We always want more. Whereas this Gamescom trailer, or behind the scenes trailer, whatever you want to call it, was just everything that I, in particular, wanted from 18 months of production with a year of pre-production. You know, being realistic at what stage they are currently in, we saw some of that work. You know, they didn't have to do that. They did not. No one told them to do that. And they did it. And they gave us concept art, in-game prototypes, and just amazing content to digest. And so with that, guys, we are back with another Tinfoil Tea Party. I really apologize for the lack of podcasts recently, but that is all due to our ongoing D&D series that I know a lot of you are enjoying. But we just had to take a break with D&D and tinfoiling because we, you know, there's only so much audio editing I can do. The D&D comes out every 2 weeks, and then we do a podcast every month. That's a lot of audio editing on my end, especially because we actually do D&D weekly and I'm editing it weekly, so it would just be a lot to do podcasts and D&D on top of that. So I do apologize that we haven't done a Tinfoil Tea Party since like June, just before E3 EA Play with FusselCon. And I really apologize that we haven't done them. They're going to continually take a break until the D&D is finished. I know everyone loves hearing the Tinfoils and the Tinfoil Tea Party, but this is actually giving me the time to be able to rebrand the Tinfoil Tea Party. I don't just want to delve into theories going forward. I think that I want to also use this podcast as like a newsy thing, like what we're doing today, extended thoughts, breakdowns, and that. You know, I think that it can be more than just theories and collabs with other YouTubers and creators. We want to kind of just make it a little bit more broad so that we can actually just have nice conversations as opposed to delving into intricate theories, which is what we'll do as well. But for today, we're actually doing an extended trailer thoughts on not one, but the two Dragon Age 4 teasers, the EA Play one and the Gamescom BTS trailer. But yeah, I do apologize for those who are asking about the podcasts. We may do one maybe pre-game awards, maybe towards the end of this year, but the D&D right now, like the way it's going, we're probably going to be finishing that maybe even early next year. So the Tinfoil Tea Parties will just be taking a break. But BioWare have summoned us because we actually have two Dragon Age 4 teaser trailers. And as you can tell, me and Sari have already done 5 videos on it at this point of release.
A lot.
And then now this podcast being literally a 6th video on the entire stuff. So it's really exciting. It's been so exciting delving into this because it's just been everything that we've wanted during this awful, awful year of 2020, and we actually have seen Dragon Age 4 in-game stuff. So enough waffle, let's get into this. So of course, me and Saria did a great breakdown on the EA Play teaser, and we had a few speculations that I'm now thinking, I don't really know how I feel about those right now. So we're going to talk about the tree, the chapel, and the Red Lyrium Enigma. Something that we thought in our breakdown was, what is this area? Where is it? And I think it's pretty safe to say that this area is actually going to be one of the first areas in Dragon Age 4, because Mac Dara teased this area in November. I think it was Dragon Age Day, in fact, or something around that, where he posted a picture of a Dragon Age 4 in-game engine footage shot on his phone, and it was the exact tree area of this. They had the Veilfire, the snow, and the tombs. Yes. And at the time, we were like, whoa.
It's a little bit of a pathway.
And the Ferelden stone and the architecture.
Yeah, and the lantern.
Yeah, exactly. And some twigs of the tree. And you're
In the night sky is exactly the same. So I think it is the same location for sure.
It most certainly is the same area. It has the exact same midnight snow vibe. So if they've been working on this area since November 2019 and prior to that, and then they showed that they're going to eat a play, maybe this is one of the first areas in the game. And something we speculated was, this area looks for Elden. We didn't say it was for Elden, but it looks for Elden. You got the Ferelden architecture, the Ferelden tomes.
Yeah, reused assets.
Reused assets, exactly. We thought we were going to Tevinter, and it makes sense to go to Tevinter because obviously Trespass is ending. But what if this area is in Ferelden? Now, someone on Mark Dara's original post with the little teaser shot from his phone said, how can this be Tevinter? Because, you know, it's not supposed to snow in Tevinter because Tevinter is higher than the equator. And then Mark Dara posted a blog saying that it can actually snow on the equator, confirming two things. That firstly, Tevinter is on the equator, kind of retconning, or not retconning, but changing the way everyone thought that Ferelden was, you know, below the equator, or was the equator itself, and you know, everyone thinking that Dragon Age Origins lore hasn't changed at all. So confirming that Tevinter is on the equator, and confirming that it can snow in Tevinter and areas on the equator. So we have an area of Tevinter, probably southern Tevinter, don't really know, that is on the equator, and it can snow there. So given that tease, it seems that this area most certainly is Tevinter, but it does have Ferelden architecture. Now, nothing is in stone. It's in-engine footage. It's pre-alpha, pre-whatever. So maybe they are placeholder architectures. They could be placeholder models, placeholder assets. Doesn't necessarily mean that these assets are actually in place for the entire game. They could just have put Ferelden assets in there as placeholders to go, hey, let's show this off right now at EA Play or whatever. So either the assets are placeholder and this is Tevinter, or it's a Ferelden Tevinter area, or it actually is Ferelden. Now, that was the Mark Dara shot. The actual EA Play teaser had the tree, the chapel, and the Red Lyrium Enigma. And we believe all of these shots are connected because it's the midnight snow, the sky's the same, the snow, the location look exactly the same. But again, that is speculation. They could all be eachly different areas. Now, the chapel shot has the breach in the background. So if that area is connected to that area, then perhaps it is Ferelden, maybe in the Frostback Mountains, given that the mountains in the third shot look similar to the Frostbacks, and you can see the breach, which is obviously at the Temple of Sacred Ashes. So if that's the case, this area cannot be Tevinter, because would you really see, you know, the breach so close in Tevinter? I don't know.
And then you can go to the far as saying maybe all three of these shots, except the Red Lyrium Enigma and the chapel. I mean, I think those are exactly the same, but the tree could be a different location because we've already seen that Mark Draws has said that is Tevinter. And I want to bring back that because I think a lot of people don't know is that Tevinter does have mountainous regions. It's been proven throughout World of Thedas Volume 1. So there is pictures you can look there. They have, you know, rockiness. You can even see in the comics as well. There's fortresses built on rocky formations. So for sure, snow and mountains do exist. I know that people are anticipating like desert areas, and I think that is something you anticipate for Anderfels and Navara. Yeah. Whereas Tevinter is quite different. It is a coastal region. There is mountains based on the coastal region, and it is hard to get to Tevinter and Minthrathis specifically because of the way it's been built. It's kind of like a moat around it, essentially, and the, you know, Nocent Seeds around it. So yeah, I think he's pretty spot on. I know he is using Argentina as like, I think, a lot of people's place to go skiing as well when he was using the article. So I think, in my opinion, I don't think it's Ferelden at all. I do believe it is Tevinter. We are going to a new area. I don't really care for Ferelden anymore, to be honest with everyone. Like, I think we've all can agree that we've had enough of that area.
As a fellow Ferelden fanboy, I can say that I think we've definitely had enough of Ferelden. We've had two games, and even the start of Dragon Age 2 was in Ferelden. So we've definitely had enough of Ferelden.
But whereas the fortress in the chapel, for instance, yeah. and the Red Lyrium Enigma, that is an argument you can make that it doesn't look Tevinter. It can be a fortress made by a Ferelden architecture. I mean, it really can be anything. I think in the end of the day, if it is Ferelden, the blight is look like it's growing around a Ferelden area. Like I said, I don't really want Ferelden back, but it does have similar aesthetics as Skyhold. It does look like Temple Sacred Ashes, like the Red Lyrium Enigma, where it looks like the floating Andraste. And you did also mention that it could be a beginning area. I do agree with that. I think it's like I said, if it's similar to what the Temple of Sacred Ashes can look like, and that was the beginning area we did delve into Inquisition, it's not far off. Also, I don't really know why they would show something like so late in the game. If that is like the Red Lyrium Enigma is like the Red Lyrium Idol, I don't know why they would show that so early in the game. That's like that I would just give away a lot of stuff. I think it's
definitely going to be an intro area where we come across that enigma pretty soon or pretty early on.
Just to give us a tie to the blight and
to show the real threat, what's going on straight away.
I don't think, like I said, I just don't think it's going to be late in the game. It could be mid-game, which is fine, but I think, yeah, it's easier to say it's the beginning of the game. I mean, I hope that game developers start in the beginning.
You know, as a writer, it's best to write the bulk of your main argument or discussion first, and then you do the ending and the start last, because that's the part, you know the middle part, but how do you really, we know that Dragon Age Inquisition had many different openings before, you met Cassandra, you met Varric, you met Solas. They had like 6 different scripted drafts. Some of them were even made into trailers and CGI models. And it took them until probably the very end until they realized, okay, we're not going to have the Inquisitor crawl out of the breach. We're going to have that cinematic, and we're going to have you meet Cassandra, who is hostile, but not hostile. So there were many different avenues for that. And I'm pretty sure it was up until the end when they actually finally decided, okay, we'll have it this way. So obviously the main bulk of the game with Corypheus and of that will have been created before, but it was then fleshing out that intro. So this could be a middle area. I doubt it's an ending area, but it could be any area in the game. I personally believe, though, that it could be an intro early, given the development stages, and just because it looks like Ferelden. If it is Ferelden, what if we actually start in Ferelden? What if Skyhold is destroyed? What if that's our call to action?
No.
That the Inquisition is, that their base is destroyed. Solas takes it over because Skyhold's his. And I don't know, we have some narrative in that. Again, that's a stretch, given that we are going to the north and we're going to have a new hero who's probably not even connected to the Inquisition. Regardless, I think it's probably Tevinter. It's just the Ferelden architecture, it's hard to tell, but they could be placeholder models. Given that, though, people will say it can't snow in Novara, and if Tevinter's on the equator, it really depends on how far Novara is from that equator, because it could also be Novara, or it could be the Anderfels, because they're all connected to each other. So it really depends whereabouts the equator is and what surrounding area it could be that has mountains and that has Ferelden architecture.
That his argument is that it wasn't a mountainous region in Argentina, so
yeah,
that makes it snowy.
That makes it snowy, obviously. Exactly, and the mountains make it snowy.
There's mountains.
Yeah.
Do we know if there's any in Novara? I don't know.
Are the Vinmarks, which kind of cut into Novara.
So it could be the Vinmark Mountains, or it could be the Hunterhorn Mountains. Yeah. I think it's a mountain range for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's just they look like the Frostbike. Obviously, we know Tevinter's mountains look like the Hoan mountains.
And we know that Tevinter's a warmer area because of Dorian. So
yeah
I think it is a mountainous region that we are heading to. I think it's a fortress in the mountains. It would not surprise me if it was a Ferelden structure in the Vinmark Mountains. In the end of the day, Ferelden is still near Armenian.
To put this trailer or the first season to the bud is we know that humans are from the north and Ferelden is in the south. And humans come from the north. So they, for all we know, it could be one of the tribes. And that's their architecture, and they built it in Tevinter, and then they went down to Ferelden. That could just be how those tribal humans created their architecture, their structure, their culture. They're Andrastian, and they brought it all the way down to Ferelden later on. But they started building those structures in Tevinter, so they just then carried it back onto Ferelden. That could simply be it. We could be reading into something completely different. I do think it's Tevinter at the end of the day, given Mark Darrow's tweet and the fact that we don't really want to go back to Ferelden unless we have to, or it's a different area, or it's seeing Denerim again. But other than that, I just think we've had enough of Ferelden. personally.
Agreed. Fingers crossed it's to winter.
Fingers crossed it's to winter, or it's a new area. Maybe even the Anderfels, as I'm sure we'll get to in a second.
Yeah, in the northern side of Thedas. Fingers crossed.
Moving on from that, we have the behind the scenes trailer, which is where we're properly going to dissect into more info. And we actually had, if you buy where employees watch our breakdown, which is just absolutely crazy to even think that they watch our content. I know that Patrick Weeks has seen one or two of my videos, but the fact that like a couple of the team members are also watching our breakdown,
oh boy,
it's crazy. It really is. It's an amazing feeling. It's also quite scary that, what you know, they could think that we're completely whack, that we're saying silly things, but no, it's humbling.
Probably.
It really is. Probably, but it's really humbling just to have some of them comment and be like, hey, I can't wait to watch. So that really was awesome to hear. Just a nice positive in this scary situation that the entire world is in. Considering we have spent 5 videos on this trailer, we're going to be talking about many different aspects of it, stuff that we haven't really dwelled on as much of in our breakdown and our other videos. So we're going to try and do things a little bit different and just talk about what particularly stuck out to us, exploring things that we just haven't uncovered yet, and maybe even updating our previous speculation like we just did with the breakdown EA Play trailer. So a few of the things are the story beats.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we saw a couple of factions, a lot of factions in this behind the scenes trailer. We know that's made by Matt Rhodes. Most of it's made by Matt Rhodes. I think the landscaping is different artists. The first one, of course, we all see is the Antivan Crows. We know Antiva is mentioned, I think I counted like almost up to 50 times into Winter Nights. So Antiva is definitely a big contender to be in the next Dragon Age, especially when we're already learning kind of political stance of it, and we already previously learned a political stance way back in Last Flight.
Yeah.
But this is even more from Tevinter Knights, and now I think it's definitely confirmed that the Antivan Crows are making a comeback in the next game. We were barely mentioned of it in Origins, just kind of like what Zevran's been doing.
And Zevran, then
two,
a few of them,
it was like Zevran again, and then three, it was like
nothing.
Barely anything. Just Dosphine's like, I'm a rich merchant. Basically, that was pretty much it. But now I think Antiva's going to be shown in a much bigger light.
For sure.
And of course, the Crows, as we've seen, is going to be a faction that we will be dealing with, whether we're in it or not. We're definitely going to have at least some companions, at least I've seen, that are Antivan Crows. Now, we know of Antiva, it is known for its like wine, sailing, rich merchants. We kind of discussed that in the breakdown. But we also want to emphasize again that it doesn't have a military power. And I think there was some banter between, I'm trying to remember, it was like Dorian and Vivian like laughing about how Antiva's like the weakest place to fight in because they have no military power. They only have the standing army of the Antivan Crows. And they're not really an army, they're just assassins, thieves. They're the deadliest assassins in Thedas, as far as we know. They're the House of the Crows. They do have a political stance. That's from the Last Flight. They have a political stance. A lot of these Antivan Crows are not only part of the royalty, but they're also part of the richest merchants, which if we know about Antiva, it's also owned by the richest merchants, so they have a lot of influence around Antiva. However, you know, Twinter Night spoilers, you're gonna have that in the podcast, but they're already kind of a weak force now. You want to kind of go into that, Jack?
Yeah, sure. So the reason that the Antivan Crows are so weak is, of course, Twinter Night spoilers, they're gonna be all throughout this podcast. The Qunari invasion is literally impending for the entirety of Antiva. Originally, one of the Talons was going to kill the rest of the Talons for a deal to actually have the Qunari peacefully invade Antiva. However, that plot was foiled because the rest of the Talons didn't want to die, and they found that out, the betrayal of the one of the Talons, and they decided to not have that happen. So what's going to happen now is the Crows need to first of all recruit new Talons because a lot of them were killed, and they need to inform the Antivan nobles about this oncoming war. With no peaceful invasion now underway, the Qunari will forcefully make sure the Qun is heard, and that means that they will literally invade the entirety of Antiva. So the Antivan Crows themselves had their own little underside plot of betrayal and subterfuge, and now they have to go to Antivan nobles to try and stop the Qunari from invading. And obviously Antiva not having a military force other than the Crows already being vulnerable, it's not going to be good for Antiva. Something that means Sari have talked about just in our own discussions is, what if one of the first things to happen in Dragon Age 4 is just the entirety of Antiva being invaded and actually, for the most part, destroyed or just under the Qun's jurisdiction? Just like being in the onslaught of that or seeing it firsthand, how crazy would that be? Because the Qunari are coming, they're invading, they're about to invade, they already are invading Tevinta, and now they're after Antiva. Ravain is known to be obviously Qunari led, so Antiva is certainly in peril, and I think that we're going to see that in the next game. So yeah, the Antivan Crows, a lot of them were shown in this trailer, and I think that that's going to be a huge plot going forward. Maybe it will affect if we have one as a companion or not. I doubt it. But I think that we may have some narrative in it even now. That obviously we have a Qunari invasion there. Maybe we might help against that. Maybe we won't. Maybe we will talk to the nobles ourselves.
We can even expand on that, right? Because yeah. We already did see a heist.
Yeah, exactly.
That was shown. I mean, we think, in our opinion, it is an Antivan noble that we see carrying on like that little
hand carriage. Yeah, because she's a huge fat lady.
Which, I mean, that's how Antiva discusses their nobles. They're fat and happy, yeah. And kind of self-centered. They're too caught up in their personal opinion about stuff. I mean, of course, everywhere else is like that, but Antiva, the way that it was perfectly depicted how Antiva nobles would look like, and that's exactly one of ones that they would look like.
Yeah.
So, kind of expanding on that, we do know from Tevinter Knights that they did kind of hand the torch over to go to Antiva City. Taya and Viago are one of the last Talons besides Caterina Della Morte, who is the first Talon. A lot of people know Lucanus Della Morte, which is the grandson of Caterina. So he's the heir to the first Talon, or kind of impending to be the next heir. But what Caterina did at the end, since there's no Talons left in 8 Talons, is reach out to the richest merchants, princes, that's what they would call in of Antiva, to call upon them and ask for help. What we know of Viago is he is a bastard child of the Antiva, I think it's the king? Right now, of Antiva. He is the bastard child of royalty, essentially, and he's going to Antiva City. Kind of mentions that Taya and Viago are going there to convince the nobility to try to just let them know and warn about the Qunari invasion. So not only are they warning the merchant princes, but also the royalty in Antiva. So we know that Patrick Weeks also notifies that what happens when you know, exactly. don't have power and yeah. you can't have those people willing to address the issue when there is a threat. So this, I think, and you're already saying, is going to fail, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people not only need to read Tevinter Knights, but if maybe read a little bit of Last Flight,
yeah.
because Last Flight also ended in a failure. We know that the fourth blight came to Antiva City, and there was just no way out of it. The nobility turned against each other, and the crows turned against each other, and the soldiers who protected the nobles turned against each other. So it's not going to be pretty, because it already has a past history of not being pretty about threats happening. And I think the reason is because they just have no military power. And that really convinces the plot to thicken in Antiva. And I think that is going to be such a good area to
yeah,
address the Qunari invasion, sure. because that is one of the top threats besides Solas
mm-hmm.
that we've been seeing. And it's been foreshadowing since Trespasser and even in Dragon Age 2. So it's going to be a big impending threat throughout Northern Thetis. It was trying in the Southern Thetis, but we'll definitely see it firsthand in Northern Thetis. But yeah, the Antivan Crows are going to be a big faction. Are we, I mean, I'm going to take it to you. Are we going to be an Antivan Crow? Do you think that's possible?
I think it's decent speculation to say that maybe this time around we'll be a member of a faction that we get to choose as opposed to being a race. But I personally would rather have origin stories that could go into that. So I think
yeah.
we could be an Antivan Crow given that we choose a certain origin story. So
right.
I would like that for sure. I think it all depends on the main narrative though, because I don't mind if we don't have origin stories, but we have a really well-rounded story for our next protagonist. I would prefer to be a Lord of Fortune, but I think being a Crow could certainly work. Maybe, you know, we could be a new Talon, but to kind of work that around with their ongoing narrative, I don't know. I think it's hard to say.
I think that, like I said, Antiva's going to be one of the biggest centers. It might even be one of the pivotal things that a lot of, not only the protagonist goes through with, but their companions as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not trying to compare to Inquisition, but it almost feels like Antiva might be like a haven.
Yes, I know, I agree with that. For sure.
You know, kind of pivotal point where we do need to go to Deventer, or we do need need to go to Nevara to help and warn them, because what's after Antiva? It has to be Nevara or Tevinter. Like, it has to be. There's no reason. I mean, they're taking over Rivain. It's literally a bay away to Antiva. There's just no way that they're going to survive this. I just think Antiva, yeah, like I said, it's literally a haven. There's no defenses for Antiva. And like I said, it's been foreshadowed in Last Flight, and now it's being foreshadowed from the Eight Talons and Tevinter Knights.
The Kunari are going to be one of the three main threats of Dragon Age 4, and we'll talk about the other two later on. But we'll move on to the next main story beat, and we'll probably go through this one quite quickly because it's pretty short, but the Grey Wardens.
And we know a lot about them. I don't think there's any lore needing to be involved with the Grey Wardens. Yeah, there isn't anything that needs to be
established. Other than Fortress Weishaupt in the Anderfels, the main headquarters of the Grey Wardens. They have Griffin eggs there. Mm-hmm. They have other secrets about maybe like talking darkspawn, and also there are two blights remaining, so the Grey Wardens are going to make for worthwhile allies if we see those blights, which is definitely going to be the second main threat going forward. Darkspawn, the blight, Red Lyrium, all of that connecting to obviously just the blight and the next ones coming, so that's going to be huge going forward. Next story beat throughout this trailer was dwarves. No dwarven characters, unless you count that little one in the tomb concept art.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe Balara, the female voice actress, Ji Young Han is voice acting, could be a female dwarf. We did have a lot of dwarven areas. We had a dwarven crypt. We had what looked like a dwarven city, maybe Kal Sharok, maybe it's not, maybe somewhere else. And just a lot of dwarven iconography on the surface in mountains on the snow. Again. Could be Tevinter, because on the equator, it can snow.
We got mountains. We still got mountains.
We got plenty of mountains, so it can snow practically anywhere as long as you're in a mountain, which makes us believe it still could be Kal Sharok. But it could be somewhere completely new. It could be a Horror of Hallmark tag, because they're also in the mountains.
For sure.
So finally, guys, we're getting more dwarven content straight away in Dragon Age 4. And I'm sure we will have a beautiful man or woman dwarf to romance in the next game. I am sure of it. BioWare have heard this plea.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, so Kal Sharok, I don't think we're going back to Orzammar.
I don't think we'll go back to Orzammar.
I would hate to go back to Orzammar. I'm sorry. We don't need to go back. I don't think there's any impeding plot that has already been discovered since Inquisition. But yeah, Kal Sharok is
the Titans.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Titans was first discovered ever from Kal Sharok.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's the first time Orzammar's ever noticed there was a Titan. The actual first time, which was around the reign of King Dorinius, which was the first Archon of Tevinter, was contacted with a Titan, one of the King Dwarves in Kal Sharok. So that is the reason why the Dwarven class split in two. And I think that is going to be the origin place where we learn about the Dwarven society and why it's split in two. So there's going to be a lot of good lore for Dwarven people.
For sure.
I think it needs more, because we knew that the Elven and Dwarves were the two original races of Thedas.
Yeah, they were. Yeah,
Before the Veil.
Before the Kunari, before the humans. So,
I mean, yeah, I mean, we'll see if it really is. I hope that maybe in Tevinter we learn about the Nereminian tribes, but I think, yeah, dwarves are going to be pretty big with the Titans. We know that they have a completely different society. They have different paragons. They have different politics. And they also have different shaper memories. So they might have the Titans.
Completely different realm of dwarven lore to explore. Completely different perspective on Orzammar. And the probably, I guess we can say, the OG dwarves, right?
Yes, they are the OG dwarves. They are the OG dwarves since, as far as we know, I guess the beginning when the Veil was created. Some of them turn against each other. And we know ever since the dwarves traded with the Imperium, they've been pretty nasty. So they're not going to be the very nicest dwarves we were going to see. But good. I think they're going to be a very good lore discussion for the next game. So that's going to be good.
Awesome. So dwarven fans out there, of course, we're everywhere. We're going to have more dwarven content.
Yay.
Hopefully playing as a dwarf will have more impact in the next game. Obviously, the next major story beat is Tevinter and all of the Imperium. As we know, Kunari invasion and so many plot threads for Tevinter that we could spend this entire podcast talking about. You know, we have the Tevinter Sicarii, who are Tevinter's new intelligence network that have knowledge on Solas that hasn't been shared yet. Then we go to the Magisterium, which is obviously the majorocracy of mages that make up decisions in the Imperium. But actually, rather than making decisions, they would rather boast one's ego. And then we have the class system of Tevinter. to the Soprates, the Altuses,
the Latons,
whatever you call them.
Laton.
The Latons. And then we have slaves, which will obviously be a lot of moral ambiguity.
Slavery.
In the next game. And so on. You know, Tvinter's going to be huge. We saw a marketplace. We saw...
What we think is Minrathis.
What we think is Minrathis. I think it's fair to say.
It's fair to say
this shot is Minrathis. It looks stunning. It's my favorite shot in the entire trailer. And then we have this weird tall dude who actually, according to Matt Rhodes's concept piece, has two people carrying him up. He has two people in his clothes who are carrying up his suit. So it's probably just like two of his slaves, and he's probably some egotistical magister, and he's just got his slaves walking around in his massive long coat just for his ego. So I think that's what's going on there, as opposed to him being kind of a magister or an old magister or just some creepy dude. Plenty of Tvinter content going forward. Of course, we're going to Tvinter. Next up, we have the Mor Talatasi, and the final, or at least the second final shot in this trailer, one of the final shots, was called Dissection, and it's two Mor Talatasi bound skeletons with a big either Mor Talatasi mage or Mor Talatasi bound skeleton who's superior or a watcher who is dissecting a dragon, and it looks epic. It screams Nevarra Mor Talatasi. It looks just so different. And I think that sets the tone for this game, that Dragon Age 4 is going to be so different than Inquisition 2 and Origins. The factions, the people, the law, the culture, just new different game. So I'm excited to see more about that. But yeah, Mor Talatasi, obviously they're going to be in Dragon Age 4, given Tvinter Nights' events. And we have a little bit of lore on Nevarra as well. So I think it's fair to say that Nevarra is going to be fairly big in Dragon Age 4. The main conflicts in Nevarra are mainly just the fight for the next throne, the Pentagast versus the Van Markham, and the Dread Wolf himself did attack the Grand Necropolis. So yeah, plenty of plot threads going on there. The actual final shot of this trailer was a Lord of Fortune.
Ooh, I'm excited about them. They were a new faction mentioned in Tvinter Nights besides the Sicarii. I think we're definitely going to be one or have a companion with them. I really just believe personally that we're going to be one of those, just because it just seems too good to be true. Grabbing whatever we want, you know, stealing things, getting money from it, getting artifacts. Maybe we know a lot about, you know, ancient artifacts. I don't know. Like, there's just so much. And not only that, we know that Hollux, which was a Lord of Fortune, like, can do disguises, can literally be anyone, look like anyone. So I really hope that we are that type of character that can just make any disguise. And especially since we are like against somebody who just looks at everybody's character and defines them, it would be so cool to just be anybody, never be who you think they are. So fingers crossed we get one somebody like that, or of course we are somebody like that. Not only that, they are from Rivain.
Yeah.
So
I am very excited about Lord of Fortune. Just being a treasure hunter would make for a great origin story if we get that. Or if we just, by default, the new hero is a Lord of Fortune, you can be easily introduced into the narrative, which is going to be about Solas. Say you are hired for a job that turns out really bad. You're hired to find the Red Lyrium Idol. And at the end of the mission, you see Solas, and then you are then brought onto this plot by many reasons. Or you are just scooped into the narrative some other way, but by this heist approach of being a Lord of Fortune. I would love to play as one. Rivain itself, obviously a very neutral part of Faedas, so you won't have any political tension going forward, you know, Tvinter, Antiva, Nevarra, and Anvils, or whatever else is going on. And obviously, Lord of Fortunes, you're not part of the Cune. So even though Rivain is very much, you know, taken over by the Cune, Lord of Fortunes escape that life in search of treasure and fortune. So it would be a perfect class or faction to play as, just to be a neutral party in Faedas that is making decisions and that is going forward for the next game.
I think it is notable to say that Rivain is, you know, always part of the Cune, but it has been recently, so a lot of the natives don't really accept the Cune. And I hope that at least this Lord of Fortune... So Lord of Fortunes, they're always everywhere, so I don't think they always come back to Rivain. Kind of reminds me of, like, maybe we might have some antagonistic values against the Cune, because if, like, Isabella did. So I don't know. We'll see how they feel about the Cune.
A lot of factions are being introduced for the narrative going forward, and that's what Tvinter Nights did too. So maybe we get to choose a faction or an origin story, something along those lines, and that could be Lord of Fortune, Antiva and Crow, Mor Talatasi, Tvinter Sicarii, Ben Hasriff, you know, plenty going forward. So yeah, Lord of Fortune could be a faction that we may play as. If not, we will definitely see one. Hollix was a Lord of Fortune. That dwarf in Herald Had the Plan was a Lord of Fortune. Bav the Dwarf. And yeah, plenty of others I'm sure we'll see in the future. I will definitely have a Lord of Fortune join our team, or we'll definitely see one. Anyway, the next main story beat are the Ancient Elves. Of course, Solas's cultists, Solas's agents, Solas's army. As we know, Solas is literally recruiting all the Dalish Elf for his scheme. Those who haven't joined him have called it a cult, the Cult of Fen'Harel, and they wear a symbol that recognizes that the fact that they are a part of this group. And I think that's what Solas actually wears on his new armor. That could just be concept art though. Anyway, we also saw a shot of floating triangle people. Originally, we were like, who are they? Are they a new faction? But they could also be the Ancient Elves because they kind of have that vibe. But then again, their body type is human. But again, Solas is hiring agents for his army, so they could also be a part of Solas's cult. Not too sure. Originally, we thought they were the Exequators, but the Exequators are in Varantium robes and are covered head to toe. You can actually see bits of the flesh of these people, so they most certainly aren't Exequators. I think if they were Exequators, though, I would be a little bit underwhelmed because I want them to be like a new race or something completely different that we haven't seen before. Right. So I'm hoping that they aren't the Exequators now I say that. It's the triangles that make me think, oh, they could be the Exequators, but I don't think they are.
I think it's just like a new form of magic or like some ancient thing you get that conjures like shields and stuff.
The shot itself reminds me of Anthem. I don't know
yeah,
why.
Yeah, it does. It's like a Dragon Age Anthem style.
It just looks like Anthem, which is cool because obviously they had really good combat. So yeah, we'll have to see what that turns out to be. Now we're going to move on to other things that stuck out to us, and that is the Blight and Red Lyrium. Red Lyrium is everywhere in the EA Pleiades and in the concept art tees. We see it everywhere. The next Dragon Age game is going to heavily involve Red Lyrium and the Blight. That is going to be a huge threat going forward. While we have the Qunari invasion pushing their forces into Vinta and Antiva, and they're going to be attacking people and just invading, and then we're going to have Solas and his agents then creating mayhem into Vinta and doing whatever they do with Solas' scheme to destroy the Veil as he threatens core factions like the Mortar Tassi and Tevinter Sakari and Tevinter Magisters. We are also on the side going to have the Blight. It is going to be creeping up on us. I mean, I don't even think you can say it's creeping up on us because it's literally out there,
right,
growing everywhere, showing us literally how far it's grown, where it is. It's turning mushrooms into evil, corrupted mushrooms, and it's just spreading everywhere. It's completely desolating Phaedus, and it's spreading the taint. It's an obvious threat, but I feel like it's going to be ignored because of the current conflicts with the Qunari and Solas. So yeah, I think that's going to creep up on us, and it's going to really hit hard. Maybe the next Blight, or maybe just poisoning everything, killing off villagers, turning monsters even more corrupt, just really being bad for Phaedus. I think it's just going to creep up at us. But if we do have the next Blight, that means more Darkspawn, that means Archdemons, that means Brood Mothers. Do you think we will see a Broodmother in 4K Frostbite engine next generation?
She's gonna be Red Lyrium looking. She's gonna spray out some Red Lyrium. So the Blight is going to be, my opinion, the biggest threat that is going to just go behind all of the other threats' back. It's gonna make them weak, and it can also kind of use against them. I don't know, because like if the Blight was introduced to the Qunari, they would just like not know what to do with it at all.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
just be turned into ogres, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, they wouldn't be able to know anything. And they'd be a really big threat if they got blighted. But so we know that there's a Darkspawn in the behind the scenes trailer. The Red Lyrium is blighted lyrium, as we know. It is a live substance, and it also cannot be removed. It can be kind of like eradicated for what it's worth, but it cannot get removed in the soil. So now we are seeing that since it's not removed in the soil, whatever's growing within it is blighted. Yeah, I think it's
going
to
be
a really bad threat.
And yeah. killing an archdemon isn't going to fix that. It's going to be a greater adversary. I think that's going to be a Red Lyrium or a Blighted Titan. As we know, Lyrium is Titan blood. Red Lyrium is corrupted Titan blood. The source of that could be a corrupted Titan. So that's probably where the main growth and the source of Red Lyrium is going to be. Now, maybe the Red Lyrium Enigma in the Ea Pleiades could be an aspect of a Titan, or it could be like just like its vein or its heart. And we could be going after a huge Titan to destroy and to stop the growth of Red Lyrium, because just it will be removed. You cannot remove it from living organisms. So how are you going to defeat something you can't remove? You have to go to the source. And I think that's going to be a Red Lyrium Titan.
Yeah, I think the source is not the Archdemon like the Wardens have been always saying. Oh, the Blight's going to end when we kill the Archdemon.
For sure.
It's not. It's never been that way. And I think Solas has foreshadowed that with Blackwall, yeah. where that's not the end. The Archdemon has never been the end goal. It is an old god for sure. Corrupted old god. Yeah. But at the end of the day, what is the most corrupted is that Titan in the end of the day, since Lyrium is Titan's blood. So we know that there is a red Titan out there, and that the Archdemons still do exist, or there's two left, quote unquote. So that is not like the end game here. Mm-hmm. The end game is the Titan. And I think that mm-hmm. Solas knows that's happening. Do I think he cares for it? I think he does, because the next thing I think we're going to mention is the Red Lyrium Idol, which I mean, I've kind of discussed a little bit from the behind the scenes yeah. of the EA play.
Yeah, we did.
Where it might be his kryptonite. But I think the Blight is everybody's kryptonite yeah, at this point.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah.
But I think the thing that is going to weaken the Dreadwolf and any other threat in Thedas is going to be the Blight. So yes, I think that is the biggest threat, and we need to watch out for that. And I love how it's already being like subtly mentioned in the games. And then of course Descent really impacted with the existence of the Titan. So now that all of that has been the foundation, we now can move on and say, yes, there is a Blighted Titan
yeah.
and it is coming back for wrecking chaos and Thedas.
Yeah.
And it is going to be, in the end of the day, whatever the Evanirus did, I think is going to be answered. And at least in the next game, or the reason why the Veil is going to come down, because it's going to be an end game kind of situation where that's going to destroy the world too. I think there's more than just what Solas is doing than just like, I'm going to restore the world. I think he knows that something's coming up.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why he's taking the Red Lyrium Idol, because I think there is something coming up, and that's why he needs to do this ritual now. That's why he needed to wake up now. That's why he needs the orb now, was because of something happening. And I think it's happening, and it might be too late. Do you think it might be too late for all this stuff?
I don't think it's going to be too late. No, I think because the breach shows that it's not too late. I think that he can still use his ritual. So he's doing it now. He's now just preparing for what's next, which we don't know. But no, I think he has got on top of it. He can somehow connect with dwarves and make them fall asleep. So we know that he has power. He has absorbed Mafal's essence to rise as the Dread Wolf. So I think that he isn't late. I think that he's doing it on time, only just. But I think because he's got Mafal's power and he's got some other powers, for all we know, and his ritual in the Fade, that he is being on time and successful at the moment. If that will continue, if that will happen, if we don't stop him, we'll have to find out. No, I think he's succeeding at the moment. Something I wonder is, maybe that's why we're going to see the dwarves of Khal Sharok yeah, or of whatever, because
sure.
they know about Titans, they know about something, they know about the Blight, they're the best to deal with the Blight, and we need to stop that. Maybe that's early game, maybe that's late game, maybe that's going to be something that's like, okay, we need to stop this growth, we need some way to do that. And that's why we meet the dwarves and we find out about Red Lyrium, and we find out about Titans, and we maybe find a Blighted Titan, or we at least discover that, and then the Blighted Titan comes in either next game or towards the end, maybe even DLC material, I don't know. But I do think that will be a huge threat in the next game, maybe a villain towards the end, maybe the actual villain of the game, or towards the third act, maybe even next game material, I don't know. But I think that the Archdemon's next Blight aren't going to mean anything compared to a Blighted Titan, considering that is most certainly the source of Red Lyrium and its growth and the Taint. So that's going to be very threatening going forward. In the same direction, we had the Stone Child and Titan Baby, or spirit in the mountain.
Little titan baby.
Little titan baby. Whatever it is, it's adorable. It's really cute. It's in the opposite direction of a blighted titan. It's so cute. I think it's probably just like a spirit in a mountain. We've seen that in before. We've seen, obviously, sylvans, which are spirits in trees. Maybe this is just a nice, happy spirit who wants to wish as well that has possessed a mountain. That's it. It's just a nice...
That's it.
It's a nice spirit.
It looks so cute.
It's adorable. It really is cute.
It's smiling at us.
And I'm surprised at how it's been shown off in early production works. So, like, they already have this in the works. They have it ready. They basically have it ready. So I wonder if this is actually early game material. Maybe, you know, it could be mid-game because we can never tell. But it looks really well done already. I'm wondering if this is going to be quite big to the plot then. It could be a titan. Maybe a baby titan. Maybe just... the face of a titan. We're not a huge, but maybe it's just its face. Maybe it's one of its many faces. Maybe it's like an ancient dwarf. Maybe it's Sandal.
What happened to you, Sandal?
Yeah.
Enchantment.
It could be an original Chabertal. I don't know. You can think of many things. It could be, I think it's safe to say that it just could be a spirit possessing a mountain or a connected dwarf embedded into a mountain connected to a titan.
Oh, yeah. What if it's like all the dwarves of Khal Sharak or something?
A hive mind. Yeah.
Yeah. He
that could
all
work.
The
it
thoughts.
Could be like a hive
it
mind.
Could be Dagna. She was like, she felt all the thoughts. She felt tall
yes.
as a mountain.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Like a connected hive mind.
Yeah, she could be like, it could be like a happy Dagna dwarf that's just telling us about funny stuff.
That's awesome. It could be that. It totally could be that. Next up, I don't think there'll be a major threat, but the next thing we have is Gilliland's creations. Now, the reason I don't think there'll be that much of a threat is because I'm comparing it to the Blight, Solas, and the Qunari, but I do think we will face Gilliland's sea creatures.
The Cetus, which was, it had like the body of a cockroach or just a bug in general. It's nasty looking, of course. But yeah, it just seems that we know Gilliland's creations are morphed, ugly looking, honestly. I mean, it's definitely a Cetus because it's surrounded in a lightning storm and they're attracted to lightning storms in the sea. So that is a Cetus. It's just it's got a torso of like in the head of a cockroach or a bug.
Well, I mean, like we saw crickets today in a pet store. And it was disgusting. So seeing like
a snake, like tail on it.
Snake with like legs of insects is disgusting. Someone who doesn't like insects as a whole, not gonna be a fun time in Dragon Age 4.
Kill it. It's gonna be, I think, the dragons. Like the version of like how many cetuses we can kill,
yes,
like 20
yes.
of them or whatever.
Do you think Spider with Hands is a Gilliland creation?
Yeah. If I think that she makes armor out of slaves' skin, then I think that is one of Gilliland's
creations.
She's
just made Spider with Hands to torment people.
Yeah, she literally probably uses hands of her slaves and just...
I feel like it's just like a meta statement from BioWare. Like, we know the fandom loves spiders, so we're going to give them hands.
The Inquisitor disapproves.
Very much so. And we have, once in Horrors of Hallmark, obviously the Tag had many Gilliland's creations. None of them were shown in the concept art, but they are out there. It revealed that they're in 11 Dwarven Tags, and we know that they're in the sea. There was a Sekarax, which was in Monrathis. I don't know if it was a Gilliland creation, but it was definitely a Lovecraftian villain.
But it's also in the behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like it's in the behind the scenes trailer. And Monrathis is coastal, guys. The main cities, the main places we're going, Antiva, Tevinter, and the Anderfells, they are coastal nations. And even Navarra has the Waking Sea. So prepare for many scary sea monsters. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. I wonder how we'll defeat them, because they can just pop back into the water and then splash water at us and kill us. But I'm sure we'll have
a lot
of fun.
Wrap us around with their tentacles.
Yeah. Honestly, I would prefer like 5 dragon fights and then like having 5 other sea monsters. That would be so good. Really cool. But yeah, we're going to have to see about them. They're going to be very interesting villains. Honestly, I'm really excited by the amounts of dark fantasy that are in this. Lovecraftian villains, Qunari invasion, absolute turmoil, political drama. It's going to be a good, good narrative. And we haven't even touched upon Solas and the Dread Wolf. So, our egg boy, obviously Tevinter Knights confirms he now has the power to transform into the Dread Wolf, or at least he has power to absorb into an archdemon like wolf, be that as you will. Solas is looking pretty fine in the concept art we saw. What do you think, Saria? Tell me all of your soul of Velen secrets on Solas.
He's got new armor. He doesn't have my tier 4 armor that he never gave back to me, but I hope we get to see him shape-shift in, like, the mechanics. I know they couldn't do it. I'm hoping maybe since this new generation, they can do their very best. Or at least show him in the scene. He is, like, a wolf, and he's like, I'm soulless. I was saying this before. He kind of looks like he is one of... I know he's like, I'm not a spy but my own, but he has, like, the badge of what we think is...
His symbol.
The Ancient of the Fen'Harels. Maybe he's just trying to be, like, a spy. But, of course, knowing him, he probably just has a plethora of new outfits to change into...
Yeah.
And then we had a discussion, I think, a little earlier this week, but about how he is essentially doing everything on his own. Like, I don't think he trusts every agent he has, or there was a reason why he went on his own for the Dreadwolf Tanky story. Because I don't think he just trusts...
Since Felisun.
Since Felisun. I just don't think he trusts enough people to do his dirty work.
His actual plan.
His actual plan.
He trusts them to like, mess up with Vedas, like, to Vinta...
cause chaos and stuff.
But he doesn't actually trust them to sit down at a meeting and get the information out of Vedas' factions and then kill them and then walk away from that. He wouldn't assign an agent to that because he doesn't trust him. He had to do it himself. Like, he also overrided the Illuvians himself because of Felisun.
Right.
He's becoming less trusting because he wants his plan to succeed that ever so more.
Yeah, and I think we see that kind of... We did discuss in the behind the scenes, it looks almost bitter. Like, he has the icy cold because of he's doing things on his own. And then, of course, in the next scene where he has, like, the silly little faces, he looks tired. He just looks weary because of what he's doing, and he's doing it all on his own. He's like a one-man game, and then of course he has his agents behind him. It's weary for him. It looks like there's a lot of work he needs to do to keep this going,
for sure.
And he just seems like he needs a nap.
He already had a sentry nap. He needs another one.
Yeah, he needs another one. Maybe for all we know, he's weary because he's doing his ritual, or his ritual's in place and it just takes a lot of out of him or something.
Maybe it's definitely doing something to him. We don't even know what it entails.
Yeah, we
honestly
don't even know, but it's in the fade or something.
What we know is he's looking sexy. He's looking...
Oh yeah,
fine.
I forgot about that. Yeah, he looks very fine.
I think the Dreadwolf next to him the wolf next to him is just representative that he is the Dreadwolf, and that's his new mantle. Obviously, Gareth David Lloyd's voice of dialogue said they call me the Dreadwolf, so yeah, he's actually taking that name for himself now. Obviously, he always was, but, like, that's a name given by his enemies, and he is just using it
to spite.
Yeah, as spite, kind of pridefully, as a badge
of
pride.
He's taking it as a badge of pride.
Exactly. I do think the wolf represents that he can transform into Dreadwolf. I hope that we see that. That's something that I want. Like, that is my top, like, story wish list for Dragon Age 4, that we see Solas transform into the Dreadwolf as a malicious beast. There was an up-resed edition of this picture, and it shows that the actual icy background is fire. Maybe veil fire, as he does say, he will watch this world burn in the raw chaos. So maybe that's this concept art is representative of his motive. Not that he's going to do that, because it's conceptual art, but actually of his characteristics, his motivations, and what he's thinking about, what he wants to do. It's a beautiful shot, and it shows that he is ready to destroy the world. I just wonder how he's going to do that, because his ritual in the fade doesn't sound like it's going to burn the world. But yeah, that's going to be something that we'll speculate plenty of going forward. And yeah, maybe we'll see something in, like, a new trailer that confirms how Solas will destroy the veil, or we'll just see, like, a glimpse of that. But we really don't even know, and we have plenty of time to speculate of how he could be doing that. Of course, we saw the squad, the conceptual artwork of characters, obviously all early stages, no one confirmed, no one unfortunately can say is going to 100% be in Dragon Age 4. I would say we can say the Qunari female is, though, because Weeks has wanted to create a female Qunari for a while. A lot of fans have asked about that, and Weeks seems pretty adamant that that's something they would like to do. So I would say the Qunari female, we can safely say, will most likely be in Dragon Age 4. Myself and developers have already given the Qunari female the name Harley Kuhn. I think it suits her. She is a dual wielder. She looks amazing. But yeah, the characters look amazing. We've spent an entire video speculating about them. I hope one of them is an Exequator or an ancient elf. Maybe not in the concept art pieces, because we've already speculated about all of those origins. But characters I think we would like to see is definitely an Exequator or an ancient elf or Felisun. I said in my Tvinter Nights predictions that I would love to see Immortal Atassi's skeleton spirit, and it seems like we may have that this time around. So can can I please give 10 points to Gryffindor? Because that was epic speculation on my part. But I really hope that we do actually have a Mortalitassi spirit bound to a skeleton. Be amazing if we had Audric or someone like that. But no, like, the character concepts alone look very different from the past, and that is something that we all want going forward, I think.
I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. The characters looked amazing, and the locations look amazing. And like I said, I just can't wait to discover any speculations I have about the next games. And I think, of course, knowing us, we'll do as much as we can until we get another trailer or whatever happens with the next game.
With that said, what is your main takeaway from this trailer, Saria? I've done my own videos and takeaways, but if you had one takeaway or just one final thing you wanted to say about the trailer for a while, what are you thinking?
Read Avenger 9th.
Yes.
And read the upcoming comics coming up, because I think that's going to be really exciting to see.
For sure.
Something to anticipate for. I think a lot of, not really calling out some people, but I think that reading seems like something old-fashioned or not really like good to pay attention to. But to be honest with you, you're going to miss out a lot in the next game if you don't read some of the stuff and you don't know what's happening in the comics.
Yeah.
It'll seem like a big surprise to you about what plots are happening in Dragon Age 4 because you didn't get involved in those other things that have already been produced. And these are the writers that are actually making the game. So
who are writing the books.
And they're writing the books and they're writing the plots of the comics. So I would give all your all, you know, and do that, especially since we're all staying home and it's still these unprecedented times. We have time to read for sure.
I agree completely. A lot of people don't read the comics and that's fine. You don't have the time. You want to do something else. That's why I make videos on them, so you can get all the lore in one. That's why I've done videos on Twitter nights as well. But I would say, given the time we have and the wait for Dragon Age 4, read the latest comics. You don't need to read The Calling and Stolen Throne and Asunder and Masked Empire. They're all previous books on the previous games. But I would say, if you care about Dragon Age 4, you have the time, read it. Twinter Nights is an amazing book. It's anthological. You don't need to constantly read it thinking about, whoa, what happened last time? Because it's different stories. 15 different stories in one book. And it's really not a long book either. It's about 300, 400, a little bit longer than Last Flight. It's a great book. I would say read Last Flight as well, because that's also one about Dragon Age 4. But read Last Flight and just read Twinter Nights. It's not long. Read the comics as well. They're all going to be worthy of your attention, I can assure you. I see a lot of people who have read Twinter Nights, but they still haven't read the comics. Guys, the comics are amazing. Mage Killer, Knight Errant, Deception, Blue Rift. We're going to have another one soon. So hop onto those, you know. They're really good. I see a lot of them underappreciated. And because of that, I'm actually making a video on why you should read them. But no, I really do think that if you want something to do during this world situation, pick up Tevinter Nights, pick up the comics and just read them. They are so good. And yeah, I'm thinking about doing a giveaway of Tevinter Nights, so stay tuned for that. So if you know you're not in the best situation given the world events, don't worry about it. I'm gonna do a giveaway so we can, you know, you can have a chance to actually get Tevinter Nights. But yeah, honestly, this trailer was everything I wanted. I've said that so many times, but it really was. Seeing the developers, like, I remember hearing Melissa's voice and being like, oh, that's Melissa Janowicz. And I'd be like, oh, that's Weeks' voice. Oh, that's Epler. Oh, you know, and it, I know, I'm a fanboy. But literally, it was so good just to see the people who are creating this game and then, like, there in the trailer talking to us. It's awesome. It really is. And I'm excited. So, Saria, when are we placing our bets? We're no longer clowns because we actually had two trailers, teasers, I guess I'll say, this year. Right. We're not clowns anymore. We've leveled up. What are we now?
We're normal people now.
We're normal creators. I guess we're just tinfoilers. But when do you think we will see the next trailer? And what do you think it will be about? Or just as a whole, what will the trailer be?
Well, because of these times, I think a lot of things are supposed to really happen this year for, like, a lot of games and a lot of developers. But I think the next, I personally think, is 2021.
When?
I'm hoping early 2021. There's, like, a random, like, little conference. But EA Play is probably the best we're going to kind of get. Really, really something.
So there's PAX, but I doubt BioWare would be at PAX.
Unless they have a panel.
Unless the Mass Effect remasters come in and they want to show something off. PAX is unlikely. So you think EA Play 2021?
Yeah, and this is for Dragon Age. This is not Mass Effect.
Yeah, this is just Dragon Age. It's just, we don't talk about Mass Effect. No, I'm joking. But yeah, this is just Dragon Age 4. Cool. So Saria's bets EA Play 2021. Because she's doing EA Play 2021, it's a safe bet. we know we're going to see something next year. The developers basically said that this year. Well, oh, yes, okay. Before we get into that, what do you think the trailer will be that we'll see EA play?
Like a pretty big reveal like Inquisition was. So...
yeah.
It's going to be like something with the protagonist and like a narrative.
Cool. CGI?
CGI. Maybe gameplay. Hopefully.
Maybe gameplay. Cool. So because Sari is gone with the safest bet, we know that Dragon Age 4 will most certainly be EA played next year. They basically confirmed that this year, that to expect something next year or at least in the coming years. I think I'm going to go for it. Maybe, just maybe, we'll see a title reveal at the Video Game Awards this year. I don't think we will. I'm probably about 30% sure. 70% clown, 30% confident. But I don't think we will. But I think just throwing it out there, it'll be 2 years since the Dread Wolf Rises. What a better time to actually reveal a Dragon Age 4 title. It could be a CGI trailer. It could be the Dread Wolf. It could be Solas. And it could just be Dragon Age 4, Dragon Age Imperium, Dragon Age Usurping, Dragon Age Downfall, Dragon Age... whatever.
Good mother.
At least for marketing, they have a marketer. So what are they going to be working on? Obviously, you know, marketing works in quarters and cycles. What are they going to be doing?
Well, yeah. Didn't one of the marketers say like the next time they have something will be with a trademark?
So maybe we will see a title reveal at the Video Game Awards. If not that, I think EA Play 2021 is the safest bet we have given the games coming out 2022, 2023, not including what is going on with the current world situation. But yeah, guys, that's our opinions. What do you think about a next reveal? Is it going to be EA Play? Are we leaning towards Saria's predictions? Or do you think that we may as well clown the Video Game Awards 2020 because we've got nothing else to do and all we care about is really talking about Dragon Age? Before we go, we've got a few channel updates. I am trying to delve into more vlog discussion territory, so you'll see a little bit more of that on my channel. But I'm also going to be continuing with my lore videos, discussion videos, and what you can expect. Let me know how you feel about the Tinfoil Tea Parties going forward, if there's anything you'd like us to change, or maybe just tell us how much you like these podcasts so we can actually create more of them. Just give us some remarks or comments down below. And Saria, what can we expect from you until the end of 2020?
Lore and theory videos, hopefully expanding on my Mythal and Mortality series. And if I make a meme, you'll definitely see it.
Yeah, follow Saria on Instagram. She's posting like fresh memes daily at the moment. So if you want some Dragon Age memes, obviously you've been already in the right place. But yeah, give Saria a follow on Instagram. But anyway, guys, our links are down below for all of our pages. Be sure to check out our D&D as well if you're just craving some Dragon Age role-playing and Faerdis. Like, we're having so much fun with it. Episodes are about half an hour to 40 minutes, and they are really good. And I know I'm being biased, but honestly, I think you would enjoy them. At least if it's just something to listen to during this world situation. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening this far. And we really appreciate it. Hope you have a really good one and stay safe. But until the next one, we'll see you soon.
Bye.
I detest this stuff.
Tea.
I detest this stuff.
Tea.
I detest this stuff.
Tea.
I detest this stuff.
Tea. Something wrong with you.